There was a medieval philosopher who said, "Beware the man of one book." In other words, don't trust anyone who thinks that one book contains all the answers. And he said this, I think, because the older you get, the more you realize how difficult it is to be entirely a true believer in almost any system, creed, faith, political, religious opinion. I say this because, as you know, this week we had a very controversial speaker, and from the emails I got, I felt as though, even though they were diametrically opposed to one another, some people approving of everything she said, some people detesting everything she said, I felt as if I was walking through the land of true believers. And I was split. A lot of the things that people said on both sides made sense to me. And I find this again and again and again. And I've been thinking about it not only because of the experience that we had this week in the synagogue, but because of the experience that I'm going to have tomorrow. I have a dialogue with a Jungian analyst about the Red Book, which is Jung's diary that he kept fairly early in his life. He lived a long life, and he started it at 38. And at the Hammer Museum at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a dialogue about Jung's Red Book, which is this magnificently published diary of his drawings and his writings. And first of all, anyone who spends their time reading psychological or psychiatric literature, and I've done some of that, obviously, to prepare for this, sees that at the core of human beings is this constant split between different impulses, different ideas, different life patterns, and it's not new. The Roman poet Ovid said, "Passion persuades me one way, reason another. I see what is better and approve it, and then I follow the worse." In other words, I see what I'm supposed to do, I say, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do, I plan to do it, and I do the opposite. And as I read through, for example, Jung's Red Book, I see some passages that could be considered anti-Semitic, because Jung was a little anti-Semitic as a German growing up early in the century. And despite the fact that he studied with Freud and then broke with Freud, and he knew lots of Jews, and that's a long, complicated story, it's clear that he was conflicted, like everybody who thinks twice about the world. And this poses a difficult problem until you realize that it's not so much a problem as it is a condition, and a condition is not the same as a problem. When you read through the Torah portion this morning, and it says, on Yom Kippur, you will afflict your souls. How do you afflict your souls? By wanting something and depriving yourself of it. You want to eat, but you don't eat, which means that you're at war with yourself. It's as if the Torah sets up this war inside ourselves, because out of the conflicts we're supposed to grow. And when you grow, you don't grow to a perfect, whole self that has no conflicts. Instead, you grow to higher conflicts, or newer conflicts, or different conflicts. This is part of not only what it means to be a human being, but if too extreme, it shades into what it means to be someone who can't function in this world. R.D. Lang's work on schizophrenics, published in the mid-60s, a famous book by a young Scottish psychiatrist, is called The Divided Self. Because when the divisions become too severe, then you can't function in the world. But as a result, we tend to think that we're whole. And when people make decisions or go in paths, we expect them to do it with no reservations and no doubts, because that's what it means to be wholehearted in this world. And so if a speaker makes an extreme statement, you must cheer them, because if you don't, you're not a believer. And if you express a reservation, that's weakness, because it's a crack in the system. But I want you to know that the Jewish tradition has never worked that way. The Talmud is the record of arguments. It's almost like a rabbi in the Talmud can't say the sky is blue without another rabbi coming along and telling him he's wrong. And not only do they argue between people, they argue against themselves. There's a phrase in the Talmud that you find again and again called raminhu, which literally means I threw him up against himself. If a rabbi says one thing in one place and one thing in another, some other rabbi is going to come along and say, ah, but last week you said, and that's a raminhu. And then they try to figure out whether you can reconcile the two different things he said, or you can't, and usually you can't. Because the rabbi, as all of us, is a divided self. Not only does the Torah recognize it, and does the Talmud recognize it, but although you may not know this, we acknowledge it every single morning in a very powerful way. Those of you who ever put on tefillin will notice that you can tell right away which one goes on your arm and which one goes on your head. Because the one that goes on your head has four compartments, four divisions in it, and you can see the line that marks the compartment on the shel rosh, on the one that goes on your head. But the one that goes on your arm is one solid block. Because, say the rabbis, everybody thinks differently. We all have different compartments. You can't have one way of thinking. But Israel needs to be able to act as one. So action as one is allowed. That is, you have one block on your arm. But don't assume for a moment that because we can all act as one, it means we all think as one. Because we don't, that's why the Shel Rosh has all these compartments. In other words, we're all divided, all of us, every morning, every afternoon, every evening. And you can lament this and think that it's terrible, or you can view it the way the poet Yeats did. Poetry is in part trying to figure out what it is that you believe and bringing it forth in the best words, in the most concise way. And Yeats, who was arguably the greatest poet of the 20th century, said, with your arguments with others, you make rhetoric. With your arguments with yourself, you make poetry. So if you allow the divisions into yourself, what comes out is much more beautiful. Because when you argue with someone else, you want to win. That's why you argue. Nobody argues to hear the other person's point of view. You argue to win. Right? It's what Joseph Epstein said when he said, Jews don't listen, they wait. Right? You know the other person's talking, you can see their lips moving, but you're just waiting to get in there with your argument so you can win. But when you argue with yourself, you're not arguing to win because you're arguing with you. So there's no one to win except the same person who loses. But when you start to feel, said Yeats, the deep conflicts in yourself, they bring up something beautiful. When you don't close yourself off from the part of yourself that feels differently from all the other compartments, when you don't feel that you have to present a perfectly unified facade to the world, as a person, as a people, in the way we talk about all the things that we talk about, then it is possible to listen, to argue, to doubt, to change your mind. That's a beautiful idea, that to be divided is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Perhaps the greatest pulpit rabbi of the 20th century, Milton Steinberg, who died tragically young, wrote a book called As a Driven Leaf about Elisha ben Abuya, who was a divided soul. Part of him was drawn to Greek culture. Part of him was drawn to Jewish culture. And recently, just in the past few weeks, Steinberg published a new book some 40 years after he died, because it was an unfinished manuscript that was left in a library, and he never got a chance to finish the book, but it's about Hosea, who was a prophet who also had a divided soul. And what Steinberg was saying is you can't live in this world aware, alive, and not feel all the different pieces not only of you, but of all the people around you who argue different things, believe different things, and have a little fragment of the truth. So that way of looking at the world is really quite wonderful. And understanding that, in fact, when you say I, you're saying lots of people, not just one person. It's what Whitman said at the outset of American poetry. Do I contradict myself? Very well then, I contradict myself. I am large and contain multitudes. I feel this sometimes when I perform a funeral and I look at the people who are remembering the person who died. And to one person, that was a father, to another, a brother, to another, a child, to another, a sibling, to another, a workmate, and you realize that everybody is many different people. Everybody contains multitudes. And it's our task not to continually slice off bits of ourselves that don't fit in, but to continue the inner argument. Just as the Talmud, page after page, year after year, decade after decade, would continually revisit the same arguments, not in a circle, but in a spiral that got higher and higher and higher. So I guess what I learned anew this week is that no human being should be one thing, and that people who insist on being one thing are trapping themselves in ways that makes them smaller, not larger. And that complexity and doubt don't necessarily mean that you don't believe anything. That you can commit yourself to the tefillin on the arm, even though you know that many, many, many different thoughts will be part of what it is that constitutes a soul. So I'll leave you again with Yeats. Our argument with others, we make rhetoric. From our argument with ourselves, we make poetry. I hope that we all argue with ourselves, that we make poetry and insight, and that with each argument, we rise to a higher level. Maybe not of argument, maybe of disagreement, of understanding, of integration, of synthesis, of all the things that it means when you take the disparate pieces together and you know that although you'll never have a perfect harmony, that still from inside yourself, that the clashing of opposites, the different kinds of ideas, the competing loves and wishes and dreams are part of what makes the poetry of you. That's how God made you. And that is a beautiful thing. Shabbat Shalom.